You're listening to Vectis Radio on FM 104.6, now on 150 watts of power, so you will be able to hear the Chief Executive of the Isle of Wight Council even louder. Hello, John. Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Ian. How are you? I'm very well.
Good. That's a good start. I mean, what I've normally said to people is when they ask you how you are, I always say, well, we're still here. And, you know, over the last sort of 50-odd years that I've been saying that, it's sort of, I don't know, even more apparent these days.
Yeah, I think that's right. And but I think it's about, you know, how we approach things, what we do, you know, what we think about, you know, how we go about our daily lives at the moment, isn't it? And it's making the best of what we've got. So whether that's what I do at the council or whether that's what I do at home, it's always about trying to make the best of things, despite the circumstances. And certainly with the bit I do for council, I'm really privileged because I'm trying to make the best for everyone on the island, and that's really what I'm focused on.
Well, good for you. And I mean, it seems to be going reasonably well. When you look at it's going really well, actually, when you look at other parts of the country that, you know, are currently in lockdown and they've had their issues and problems and so on. I mean, yes, we've had ours, but, you know, nothing is as major as what's going on around the country. And I just want to chuck in. I'd say something to my son, and I've been saying it to him probably since he was a teenager. You got to do whatever you got to do to get through this life. And something that is people are going to look at today and for the last 6 months and probably think, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, you know, I think that's really right. And what I am seeing, and you're right, the island is in a really good position at the moment. You know, our rate of cases is very, very low. I think we're sort of fourth or fifth lowest in the country, in England, for upper tier authorities, so that the rate of infection is very low. You know, we're down below 100,000. And if you compare us with, I don't know, Bolton, that was up to about 190 per 100,000 when I looked over the weekend. So we are good in that place. We're in a really good place. But I think that's credit to everybody on the Isle of Wight who has, you know, really focused on what they need to do. They've taken personal responsibility. You know, they've followed all the guidelines, they've done the social distancing, they're wearing masks, they're doing all the hand washing, and you know, I think the whole community can take great credit from the current rate of very low rate of infection on the island. But we can never allow ourselves to be complacent. You know, we're doing a lot of testing, but we don't really know the extent to which the virus is out there. We don't really know the extent to which people who don't show symptoms are still able to pass it on. So very much, I think we have to carry on being cautious, and we have to carry on being careful, and we have to really work hard as a community to protect that really strong place that we're in, and protect our whole community.
There's lots of things I want to ask you. Obviously, you touched on a number of things there. Other places have been locked down, and you know, people will ask the question, what happens if we get a lockdown on the island? How slim is the chance that will happen? But I'm sure there's a plan in place. What is the plan?
Well, the plan depends upon the circumstances. Unfortunately, I can't be more specific than that. So it'll depend, you know, where we get an outbreak, whether it's in an institution, a building, whether it's in a town, whether it's in a village. It'll depend on a number of things. But I think what we're now seeing is the government are defining three tiers of lockdown. And that will mean a standard set of things will happen in a place, depending upon the level of infection. For example, right at you've got what's happening in Bolton and Newcastle and places like that. That's right at the far end of significant intervention. Then there's a sort of middle ground where there's a little bit of intervention, which might mean some of the curfews, the 6 o'clock, and you know, people not able to mix in households. And then there's the third tier, which is areas that are just on a kind of low-level watch list, so nothing really happening. So the government at the moment, I think they're due to publish some further guidelines later this week, which will basically say if the island falls into one of those three categories, these are the things that will happen. And as an island, we'll also be able to make a suggestion to the Secretary of State about whether there's anything else that should happen, which is bespoke to the island. But as I say, it really depends upon the circumstance, it really depends on the location, it depends on the rate of infection. And we've got plans and things written for all of those different circumstances. But at the moment, I think our main plan and our number one focus is on prevention and preventing the spread of the infection and the transmission of the disease by encouraging everybody to carry on following all the government's guidelines about, you know, hands, face, space.
So just so for instance, so people can be rest assured, because I'm looking at it one way, but maybe it needs some clarity from yourself or someone. You know, we've just had an announcement that there is another case on the island. I mean, you know, on the surface you think, well, that's just one. Okay, what is one more, and people might moan about it, which is, you know, obviously it's sad because it's someone's life is going to be affected and their family as well. But it is only one, we should reiterate. And, you know, when it comes down to a lockdown situation, how many would we have to see? Is it difficult to answer? Is it, you know, that how many would we have to see in a day or a week to sort of put us in special measures so we can get sort of a handle on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're into something like a rate of about 50 per 100,000 over a 7-day period, that's where you start to get into significant measures. You start to fall into the area of enhanced support. So once we're over that sort of level, then I think we could start to see the government looking at us and start to think about, well, what sort of measures might we implement to slow down the rate of transmission on the island. When we're at about 25 cases per 100,000 in the previous 7 days, we'll be an area of concern. So the government will be looking at us, trying to think about, well, you know, is there anything that we should do, you know, low level type measures, and that might be stopping households mixing, you know, it might be, you know, additional curfews, but at that point will be an area of concern. So as I say, once you're starting to get to about 50 cases per 100,000 in the previous 7 days, and the fact that the rate is rising, so, you know, we could be at 50, 100,000, but going down. But once, if the rate is rising and it's about 50, 100,000, then we start to get into areas of potential intervention, potential lockdown.
Okay.
But as I said earlier, our current rate, my best estimate is it's less than 1 per 100,000 over the last 7 days. So that puts us in the bottom, as I say, 5 or 6 places in the country for rate of infection.
But that's, let's just reiterate as well, that's not so that people can go and relax and become complacent. It's like that because we've been keeping things tight and doing things properly and remembering those important things: hands, face, space. I've got to ask a question that is, it comes out of summer, but I do know that, you know, there's still quite a lot of people were here on holiday on the island. And when it comes down to figures, just say, for instance, if somebody was from, let's just pluck somewhere out of the air, Ipswich, okay, you're from Ipswich, you come down to the Isle of Wight, you've fallen ill and you test positive. Where does that figure go? Does that figure go back to Ipswich or does it stay here on the island?
No, it goes back to Ipswich. It stays with their home postcode. But what we do find, though, is so if somebody is from Ipswich and they're found positive, you know, we'll help them get home if they're travelling as a passenger. If they've got a car, then we'll help them get home as well. But what then will happen is that the NHS test and trace will work out who they've been in contact with on the island. And then we'll work with those people on the island to, if they have to self-isolate, and to support them to get a test, so that, you know, again, we're managing to make sure that positive index case hasn't affected the island. And that's very much where the Public Health Department come in, working with Public Health England to make sure we identify every contact that person has had on the island, so we can make sure that they don't transmit or pass on the infection more widely.
Okay, thanks for answering that. And I want to talk about the app in a moment, but first of all, I just want to talk about testing. You know, how good is the figures for getting testing at the moment? We've all heard over the last couple of weeks that up and down the country, people are being sent here, there and everywhere. How's it going?
I think we're still having some challenges with the island's testing facility, but I hope that they are now starting to improve. I've got some further conversations about that later today. I mean, I think it's been well written in the national media that the fundamental problem is that there's not enough capacity in the labs. So test-wise, across the whole country, we might be able to do 500,000 tests a day, but the labs are only able to do 400,000 tests a day. So what the government are trying to do, using the test and trace team, they're just trying to manage the capacity in various places so that they've got more capacity where they've got lockdowns, rather than where areas such as the island where there is less
less of an incidence of COVID. The positive that we've got on the island is that when they are restricting capacity in testing service, testing centres, they haven't restricted the capacity on the island on the basis of the fact that they know how hard it is for people to travel to the mainland. So what I would say to people is that there should be enough capacity to get people tested on the island. But the problem is when they release the booking slots, they only release the booking slots twice a day. So they release them in the morning before 8 o'clock and in the evening after 6 o'clock. So if you call just around those times, you should be able to get a testing slot either for later that afternoon or the following morning. If you call and you can't get a slot, you need to try again later on in the day, just your early evening or early morning, and you should be able to get a slot on the island. There is enough capacity to be able to do that on the island, but it is just about when you call and how nationally they've released the booking slots available to people. So as I say, my advice would be, don't take a slot on the mainland. Keep trying for the island. You should get one within 24 to 48 hours at worst.
And the message is, don't phone the cricket club. Don't phone a certain number. There is a particular number that you need to phone. Can you just remind us what it is?
Yeah. Don't phone the cricket club. You can only book online, or you can book by calling 119. That takes you through to the national booking facilities. As a council, we've got no influence or control over that management, that national system. It manages all the testing facilities across the country and books all the testing facilities across the country. So we've got no real influence over that. Other than, as I say, we have been talking to some of the senior managers and some of the senior leaders in the test and trace team to make sure that, A, there is enough facilities available so people from the island don't need to travel to the mainland, and B, we have been trying to encourage them to get a system in place so people from the mainland don't need to travel to the island.
Brilliant. Let's talk about the app. The app obviously was rolled out on the Isle of Wight and somewhere else in the UK, and obviously it's now UK-wide. We've obviously played a massive, massive part in that, and we continue to do so. How's that going?
Well, again, it's a nationally run project at the moment, so we only get snippets, but I think really, really positive. I think I saw an email last night that said they've had 10 million downloads of the app across the country. So that's England and Wales, which I think is amazing. I think people are now starting to see, you know, as we're getting a rising tide of COVID in different parts of the country, that the app could be a really positive way of helping people go about their business, of supporting the test and trace program. And I think that's the important thing to remember, is the app doesn't work on its own. It works as a functioning part of the test and trace program. So, you know where you've been, you can tell people where you've been. And then they can warn you if you need to take action, but equally you'll know if you don't need to take action. I think the really great thing on the island is how many businesses are now starting to display the QR codes, so that if you go into a business or you go into a cafe or a restaurant or a pub, you just literally need to scan the QR code, and then the data about where you've been is stored on your phone. So if you're contacted, you were at X place at a certain time, and you can say, yes, I was there, or no, I wasn't. And actually, that's really helpful if somebody tests you, if somebody rings you up from the tracing team, because what you want to know is precisely where you were, not, I was in the Bargemen's Rest between sort of 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock, and somebody in there came across with something. You want to say, actually, I was there just before they got in or just after they got in. So you've got a much better idea about were you really in contact with the index case or not. And I have to say, we've got QR codes in County Hall and all of the council's buildings now. We had to do it by law, but we'd already got them in place anyway. So even our staff now are coming in and checking and using the QR codes.
Okay, sticking with the app, but this is kind of a sort of not even a national thing. This is a worldwide thing I'm going to ask, and maybe it is worth asking that question, as we've been ground leaders so far regarding the app. Now, millions of people are just about to get a new iPhone. Because the new iPhones are coming out, other phones are available too, and Android phones are available as well, and people are going to be buying new phones. How feasible is it to be able to get those phones that will, just the first thing you do is download software for the updated software for your particular phone, regardless of what it is, How much are they on board when it comes to Android and Apple that they could actually stick that in their own system so it's there, so you don't even have to download it, so you're not even asked a question. There it is, it's on your system. Bearing in mind that this is probably going to be around for the next 6 months and possibly beyond, you know, there could be future problems with other things in the years to come. So, you know, with Apple doing things like heart rate and sleep rate and things like this, it would be really beneficial if they were to get behind this and put this on your phone so you don't even know that it's there. You just are on the system.
To be honest, it's not a question I can answer. I don't know those sort of how those conversations are going with Apple and Google and others. I'm sure it is possible to do something like that, but whether or not issues of privacy and data protection and all those other sort of things come into play that are kind of beyond me at this moment in time. I mean, my whole focus is, you know, try and get as many people on the island using the app, whether it's businesses or whether it's individuals. I think it's a shame that it only goes on the more on the newer versions of Android and iPhone. And we're certainly trying to encourage colleagues at NHS Digital to try and kind of roll it backwards, if you like, to some of the older phones. But as for going anything wider than that, that's beyond my technical capabilities, I'm afraid.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll get in touch with them on your behalf and sort of say, hey, look, this is an idea that we've had on the Isle of Wight. We've been testing things, you know, a couple of times now. We've been ground leaders in doing it. So maybe this is a question that they need to answer when it comes down to putting it on the system. They've got other healthy things on there that is they're automatic. So maybe this is going to be more helpful going forward. So leave that one with me, John. That's something I can do.
Yeah, you've got the better contacts than me, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll give it a go anyway. So the app, just say, for instance, if you're one of those sceptical people that, you know, a couple of months ago, you got the letter and you got the codes and so on, and you thought we'd wait and you've waited and now you want to do it, but you've chucked the code away, you can still become involved, download the app, and then what? How do they get a new code?
You don't need a code anymore.
You don't, right.
Just download the app from the App Store or the Android Store, and then that's it. It just starts running. The only thing you need to put in is the first four digits of your postcode. And the only reason they do that is so that they can try and coordinate some data at quite a high level about usage, about who's reporting it. So it links back to the how do you manage an outbreak or a lockdown, those sorts of things. So you don't need a code anymore. You just the code was only for the test and the trial element of it to stop everybody from all over the country sort of downloading it and trying to use it.
Okay. As we approach the flu season, it's not too far away. I've got to be honest with you. I've had my flu jab. And this morning I've got an aching arm, and I didn't moan about the fact that I had to pay 12 quid for it, even though I'm over 50. I don't care. I've got it, and that makes me hopefully safe from flu. But how much of a problem would the flu season be in hampering, beating, or, you know, will it get mixed up? Will there be, you know, the situations where people don't know what they've got?
I mean, I think you raise a really important point, and I think, you know, what we're trying to do is you work with colleagues in the NHS. We'll be starting a campaign this week to encourage as many people as possible to have a flu jab and to get that flu jab as soon as possible. But we do know that the NHS are going to roll it out. So they're going to, you know, those in most at risk, if you like, first. And then it will become available to the rest of the community as we move closer towards the winter. But I think it's really, really important that people do get a flu jab, because we do find that this time of year, and colleagues in the NHS will speak about this better than me, but the hospital does tend to get an awful lot of people presenting with flu and flu-like symptoms at this time of year. So if you're trying to deal with lots of people presenting with flu, and then you've also got to deal with lots of people presenting with COVID, the two things don't look that dissimilar at times as well. It's better that people can get a flu jab than they're staying away. They're not putting so much pressure on the NHS system. And that allows the whole focus of the system to be around, you know, continuing to fight COVID. I think we've got to not lull ourselves into a false sense of security. You know, when this all started and COVID all started and we had, you know, we built effectively the Nightingale beds at the hospital. There was lots of additional capacity put in there. and they were never fully used at the start of the process. But that doesn't mean that they won't be needed this time. But there's less chance they'll be needed if people aren't in hospital being treated for flu and flu-like symptoms. So I would absolutely urge everyone to follow your lead and get a jab as soon as possible.
Absolutely. And, I've got to be honest with you. At this point, I will point out my arm is aching and it's not too bad. It would be a couple of days and it would be gone, but it would be well worth it. You know, it really, really will be. I mean, if you've had the flu jab before, most people, you know, get an aching arm for a day or so. So, you know, that goes with the territory.
That's the worst you get. It's the worst you get. And I think a lot of people say, oh, well, I've had the flu jab and then I get colds and this, that and the other. And I know that, I mean, lots of people will say it, but that has been proven not to be the case by many studies. You know, the jab is really, really important. The flu jab is really, really important to protect you, especially through this winter, which is going to be very, very difficult and very trying for us all.
Okay, I've got a curveball question for you. Obviously, we're in a situation, and you're in a situation, where the majority of people that work for the council are actually being told work from home. How efficient is that? And just say, for instance, if there was a cure tomorrow and everybody could go back to work, will they go back to work, or is what we got more efficient?
Well, I think our experience is that we seem to be more efficient. We seem to be getting much more work done. We seem to be getting through, you know, lots of cases where we're trying to manage various bits of things. It's hard to make a like-for-like comparison because in some areas we've just got additional work and additional capacity that we've had to deal with. So, you know, we know that because of the lockdown, there were lots of people who probably needed adult social care, for example, during the lockdown, but weren't known to us or didn't make themselves known to us because they were trying to protect themselves. Bit of the same in children's service as well. There was probably some children who needed more support than they were asking for. So all of that now is we're trying to deal with all of that now and deal with that catch up and make sure that, you know, everyone has got all the services that they need. So, you know, we've probably had much more take or ask on what we are providing than we had pre-lockdown. But I think that, you know, we've done a lot of staff surveys and we've spoken to a lot of our staff and they are very comfortable with how they're working at the moment. They are really, really committed to doing the best they can for our island community. You know, I see that every day in the email traffic and the many, many teams meetings that we all go on. So I think it's a real positive and it's standing us well for the future. We were very lucky as a council. We'd already started to roll out what we'd called agile working, so trying to encourage people to work much more closely to where they were delivering services. So, for example, you know, if the social worker had to go out and visit somebody rather than come back to the office to input the details onto the computer, they could just do it from where they were and where they were making the visit. So all of that has been a real positive, and I think it's really, really helped us through COVID and will continue to help us over the next 6, 12, 18 months, however long it takes. And, you know, we'll work with our staff and we'll work with our councillors to find out and agree what the best model of delivering our services is when we get to the end of COVID or when we get into something like a more steady state situation.
Okay, I've got a couple of, another curveball question, if you like. I mean, this has been asked probably over the last sort of 6 months, and I think I know what the answer is, but I'm asking it on their behalf so you can answer it. So you get the stick and I don't. Many people have said, if the figures are so low on the Isle of Wight, can't we just stop people coming to the island? I know this is going to kind of sound selfish, but this is what people have asked me to ask. Can't we just stop people coming to the Isle of Wight? We can boost our own economy because we can get on with going to the pub, going to restaurants. Singers, songwriters can get back in the pubs and perform. We could open up the cinema, the theatre, and so on. I know that sounds really, really selfish, but there's probably a reason why we can't do it. So what is the reason?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons. So if we stop people coming to the island, does that also mean that we'll stop islanders travelling to the mainland? Because it's exactly the same, if you like, in terms of people going to work across on the mainland or going to visit friends, families, relatives, because they'll be in contact and still have to come back and could potentially bring things back. I think secondly, whilst we know our cases are low, you know, the suspicion is that there is still, the virus is still out there and it's still being transmitted. And you know, the more that we kind of get together and the more that we see people, then does that increase the rate of transmission and therefore we start to see a spike in our cases? I think there is something that's very, I mean, our economy is based on, you know, over 1.2 I forget the numbers now. I was going to say 1.2 million, but I'm pretty sure it's more than that. And so I'm off the top of my head now. But a significant number of visitors coming to the island, multi-millions, that all would contribute. I think an overnight stay on the island is worth about £700 a night to the island's economy. So that we're not going to be able to replace that £700 a night to support those businesses that are that work within the tourist industry, which is a key part and a key staple of our economy. So I think for all those reasons, it makes it very, very difficult for us to just put the shutters up and kind of say, well, we'll be all right. We'll just carry on as we are. You know, we have got a synergy with the mainland. You know, we've got people who travel to the mainland for all sorts of healthcare reasons, whether it's for their chemotherapy, their radiotherapy, all that sort of activity. So I think it does make it very difficult for us to close the island down completely.
Okay.
And I think we're already seeing some real challenges with our economy and the numbers of unemployed, and I just think it would add to that.
That makes sense, and I'm glad you answered it, because obviously it's a question that I'm asked a lot. So, we've heard it from the horse's mouth.
Thank you.
Two more questions. One, have you had a flu jab yet? Because you're over 50, I know.
No, I haven't had one. I'm due for one next week, I think.
Well, make sure you get one.
I'm definitely getting one.
You're not getting any younger. And obviously we're trying to lift the spirits here, because it's 6 months. We've got another 6 months probably of this to go, and probably 6 months. I think it's fair to say that this 6 months coming is going to be far more tricky than the 6 months we've just had. Even though we've got things in place, I think the weather and it being winter is going to play a major, major part. So I'm guessing you've got things in place for the next 6 months with mental health and so on.
All of the mental health support that's been put in place, we're tied into the NHS, and we're signposting through our website. We're signposting lots of people to services provided by the NHS and provided by the voluntary sector to help people with that sort of need. You know, we're still very much linked to our community hubs and our community cells. So, you know, everybody who did such an amazing job right at the start of March in terms of protecting the community, we're still in contact with them. So if we need to step anything up and do anything in partnership with the communities again, then we'll be able to do that. So that's all really positive. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be a really difficult 6 months. It's going to be less easy to get outside and meet people. It's going to be dark. It's going to be cold. All those sorts of things which we know we're about to face. And so we are encouraging people to try and think about, you know, making some plans for, you know, how you will get through the 6 month period, how you might have to deal with self-isolation. If you're asked to self-isolate, you know, what would you do? How would you do it? How would you look after yourself and help people to look after yourself? So I think it now is a good time to start thinking, start planning about the winter, knowing that it's going to be tough. But we will carry on putting messages out, and we will carry on signposting people to where they can get help and support should they need it.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us today, John. I've got one more awkward question to come, and that is, I want you to pick a song.
Pick a song, yeah. What, it's got to be an uplifting type song, or just any song?
No, you just pick a song. I'm going to play a song just for you.
Oh, bless you. There's a song, I mean, I was... Crikey.
See, I told you it was tricky.
Yeah, I know. A few years ago, I did some work with our adult and community learners, and we did a little award ceremony out, and it stuck with me for quite some time. We did it at Adventure Botanic Gardens, and these people who've, you know, really worked hard to get new skills, they're adults, they've gone back to learning, and they've really worked hard to get new skills. And when they did the award ceremony, we played a song by Natasha Bedingfield called Unwritten. And I'm not ashamed to say it brought a tear to my eye when I saw what those community learners were doing. And that song at the same time was really moving. So that would be my song.
Okay, brilliant. I mean, what's lovely about that is, and just a follow on, is that we have just made a connection with adult learners, and we're going to be doing something ourselves at Vectis Radio for them. So,
oh, brilliant! I didn't even know. So thank you. That's really helpful.
No problem at all. So Natasha Bedingfield, Unwritten. That's what we're going to play for you. Hey, look, John. Thanks for being there. Keep yourself safe, and don't forget to have that flu jab.
No, I won't. Not anyone here. And everyone else have the flu chaps as well. Thanks for your time.